Hello there, and welcome to the podcast. It's John Markar here, and I thought I'd just jump in with a very quick but very important message that I wanted to share with you before you delve into this episode of the Driven Chat podcast. This podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now come to an end. But don't worry, I'm not going to stop you from listening to this episode or from catching up with the 185 episodes that we've recorded in this format. I just wanted to let you know that if you're looking for our new episodes recorded after December 2023, then you'll need to seek out our new podcast, The Driven Podcast. You can find The Driven Podcast in all the usual podcast platforms, including, chances are, the one that you're listening to this one on right now. So please do enjoy this episode, share it with a friend by all means. But when it's done, don't forget to search for the new podcast, The Driven Podcast, and subscribe to the new format to hear the new stuff. To make life easy, head on over to the Driven website via driven.site. There you will find links through to the new podcast, including links to your preferred podcast platform. And hey, whilst you're there, why not check out everything else we do, including hand-picked automotive news stories, car and bike reviews, video features, and even more. For now, though, I'll let you enjoy this episode, and I will remind you again at the end of the episode, but for the future reference, this message is approximately 1 minute and 30 seconds long. That's 6 clicks on the 15-second skip button. Enjoy!
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
Well, hello, welcome to this week's Driven Chat podcast. We are once again recording at our favourite location in the entire world. We are at Caffeine and Machine on what is, I think, the hottest day any of us have ever experienced in the United Kingdom. Fortunately, we are in our very much air-conditioned truck, parked up in the car park of the grounds here. Now, this is going to be quite an interesting episode. You are listening right now, just in case you hadn't guessed already, to the voice of John Markar. Hello, good to have you here. And, as ever, I'm joined by my wonderful colleague. I tried to think of a nice anecdote to bring you in there. I just couldn't think of one, Amy. I'm sorry. Wonderful colleague is all you're getting.
Wonderful colleague. It sounds like we work in an office all the time. This is very much we not do. An office job.
We do sometimes work in an office, but not very often. So yes, Amy Shaw Hello. Is here with me. Hello, Amy. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm quite warm because, I'm without many vehicles at the moment. So I'm riding around on a motorcycle, which means I'm also trying to be quite safe and got lots of clothing on all the time, which means I'm very, very warm when I'm journeying anywhere. So I arrived somewhere not particularly nice.
Well,
you said that you'd lend me some riding gear.
I've got some summer riding gear. We'll get to that. That's an off podcast conversation, but we'll get there. I promise. Now, we're also joined by a voice that's joined us. I'm trying to think now, Ants. Is it 2-3 times previously?
3 times, but we only ended up recording one podcast.
Yes, that's correct.
I tend to swear a lot. And say things that I probably shouldn't say in public.
Yeah. So that's the voice of Ant Partridge, who has joined us for the maybe 10th time. The second audio recording that we've done. Now, Amy, I'm very glad that you've turned up on a bike today. Ant, as everyone listening will probably know, if they know about you, you are very known for your interest in bikes and your working field. And we have a very special guest joining us this week who is also in that field. So it is very much a two-wheeled version of what we do this week. You'll notice there is no Andy J with us this week. It is just myself, it is Amy, and it is Ant, and our special guest is Jody Milhouse, otherwise known as Thornton 100 Motorcycles.
Just a Thornton 100.
How are you, Jody?
I'm great, thank you. Yeah, again, very much like Amy, absolutely roasting. I rode here and it must be 32 degrees out, yeah. And it's like riding through an oven.
It is.
And I rode my bike here, the world's fastest bobber, and I'm joined by my brother as well, who's outside, I'm sure, sunning himself with one of our supercharged Speed Triple RS Triumphs as well. So, very enjoyable ride, but a very, very hot one in. So I'm very, very pleased to be in your air conditioner.
If anybody wants to know how it feels, because obviously opening an oven, maybe, it's kind of how it feels. But literally, if you put a hairdryer on full wag in front of your face, that is like it is.
That's exactly
riding
it. Honestly,
motorcycles.
It's like riding driving through just hot air.
And I'm sorry, I got to stop all you guys. You Brits, all you do is complain about the weather, right? First, it's too cold and it's too wet. And now it's sunny and beautiful, and it's too hot. This is horrible.
We're melting. We're not used to it.
Tomorrow, it's going to be chucking it down in horrible rain, and you guys are going to be, damn. Wait for the rain again. You can't be happy with weather.
No, you're right.
This is lovely. It's lovely.
I always kind of question whether or not we should refer to weather when doing these podcasts. So we're recording this today on the 20th of June. Now, chances are by the time this goes out, it might be in a few weeks from now. As you say, Anne, it probably is going to be pouring with rain. It might be snowing, for all we know, because it's Britain. And we'll all look back on that 2 or 3 days of hot weather and go, oh, yeah, well, it wasn't that bad, surely. But you're right. Yeah, we are the world champion complainers when it comes to weather, sorry about that.
It's very strange.
You've spent a lot of your life in very hot and sunny Spain riding a motorcycle.
Yeah, so this for me is joyous.
Wow.
This is how life should be every day.
Yeah. And yet you chose to live here, so.
I didn't.
More for me.
I didn't. I came here for 4 months to do a TV show. And 4.5 years later, I'm still
here. Still
here.
You're still here. Immigration haven't caught up with you yet.
Riding motorcycles, you can't, I would ride a motorcycle any weather other than, I think, icy, snowy. But would you ride in the snow and ice?
No.
I've ridden in the snow and
have
ice.
Have you?
I have. My favourite time riding in snow and ice is actually before I passed my driving licence test, and I actually had a Honda C90. And I rode it to college every day, and I rode it in the snow and the ice, and I rigged up some bodged up heated grips as well. But that thing was great because it was rev and go. You could ride along with both feet on the floor in the snow and basically have it sideways the whole time. Yeah. It was so much fun. I had knobbly tires on. I had a cup holder for my coffee as well in the morning. So honestly, it was brilliant. I had the beer granny screen on as well, and I had a top box, and it had a sticker on it. It said, "Don't follow me, you won't make it." And that was true in the snow. It was a lot of fun, and I came off it a fair few times, but I've a bit of experience in riding in the very wet and a lot of off-road riding experience as well. So I'm kind of comfortable with it. But like you say, the ice on the road, black ice, is not a joke. My brother will tell you, actually, he stacked it pretty hard on his way to college once with a black ice. So, it's not one to mess with. But, if you're ready for it and you're expecting it, then I don't mind it personally.
This is my weather. If it's raining, I'm like, I'm fine. I'll take the car.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. In Spain, I used to ride in the rain because I was just like, we didn't have much of it. It was kind of like a novelty. Like, I'd put my sailing gear on and literally get on my bike and go to work. But, here, I just like, there's no need. If it's just always wet, I'm just like, I don't like getting wet, taking my gear off all wet and then drying it out, finding a place to, nah.
Unless we're at Goodwood, in which case
then we ride up the hill in mud and wet. And
I got to the top, my bike's got no mud guards on it yet. They're in development.
I think I have a photograph of the back of you because you've just got this massive brown stripe of mud up your helmet.
There was two stripes up my back that weekend. One was just brown stripes and it was from the wet and the rain, I promise you. And the other one was black rubber from all the burnouts that I've been doing as well, so it's stuck all up my back. So I've been picking it off the back of that bike for a few days now, and good times though. We got a lot of good content from it, but like you say, when you're at the bottom of the hill at Goodwood and you're going to ride up, it rains, you don't often get an opportunity to do that.
And
so.
Also, it's not like they give you, you don't get there, you don't say, hey, if you come at like 7 in the morning, you can have a couple runs up the hill to sight the lap. You just literally
go up blind,
just go up. I'm like, didn't know whether there's a left or a right. I literally came to the end of the first, it's like the second straight, because that straight's not actual straight.
No, it's straight.
It's straight, and then there's a left kink,
and
then another straight, and then a big left.
Yeah.
And that second left is off camber, and it's blind. You can't see it. So I opened the throttle. I'm like, oh, it's dry.
Yeah.
So I pinned it a little bit on that BMW M1000RR. I was like, okay. And then all of a sudden, there's a corner there, and it was in the wet, and I had to follow the dry line, because I think I'm going to tip in. I'm not going to tip in that wet, muddy bit. I'm going to go over in this dry line. And so it took me off the apex of the corner. I was like, I can't not make this corner. Not a good one. And I'm like,
so
tipped in, and I'm like, woo. So I got up and I think, I'll take it easy from here.
I think they call that one, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mollicum Corner. And it's like a left-hander, and it's off camber, and there's a video of me riding up in the wet on my bobber, and someone in the crowd filmed it, and I came around it about fourth gear and just pinned it, because it's a left and it's a straight, and I'm just bouncing off the limiter and spinning
up. It must be great to drift with something like that.
It's so long. It's so long. It's brilliant. It's so much fun, but the tyres are pretty sticky on it, actually. But like you say, going up that the hill... The first time I was sat on the line, literally launch control, off I go, straight down that straight. I get to that first corner and it's so narrow and it's so tight and it's a right-hander. And it's like, and it's sort of a right, a straight, and then a right again. And then he's like, so you got onto that straight. And it really caught me out. And I was into it, wobbling around, like, oh, my back was twitching and that. And I'm on this bobber, like, this wide wheel bobber. And it's just so sketchy. And I kind of got around that corner. And like I said, I did six runs that weekend. And my last run, everyone had gone home for the football anyway. So there was no one watching. Mm-hmm. And that was my best run. And that was on the start line, bouncing off the limiter, flames, burnouts, launch control, straight off that straight, wheelie in, come around. And I knew the track by this point. I was on it. And I was like, literally coming into that corner. So like you say, after you go, there's like that first straight, there's a slight left under the bridge, and then it sort of goes right and then left again, like you said, Mollicombe corner, that I think it's called Mollicombe corner. And I literally, there's a video of me coming into it full lot, like on the brakes, flat out, like literally back ends like twitching, and then off to the left and then straight up that hill spitting flames. And what an experience on that bike. It was so much, but it still gives me goosebumps now thinking about it.
And on a bike that you've made.
That I made,
you've crafted it with your hands. And I think that's probably a good time to talk about what you do, because that's going to feed in quite nicely. So Thornton 100 Motorcycles, for anyone that's listening at home thinking, I might have heard of the brand. You know, for me, it's one that's been around on Instagram for a long time, and I've seen you've been doing some awesome content on YouTube as well. Why don't you give us an overview of the brand itself, how it started, what got you into it, and what's got you here, arriving on what is looking like quite a special bike.
It is a special bike. That's my baby. So Thornton 100. Thornton 100 is an interesting one. So I'm 25 now. I know I don't look it. I had a hard paper around it. I've had a hard 5 years. So Thornton 100 started, I was a disgruntled apprentice, really, and I sort of left... I left there on very bad terms. I got a lot of fines and tuition fees because I got signed contracts this and the other. And I started the company with a lot of negative equity, and I had a credit card with a £2,000 limit. And I had it was back of a lorry, but it was essentially a shipping container and one ramp and a load of tools that I just sort of had because it was my hobby, playing with motorbikes in the evening. And when I left there, I said, right, I'm going to just go and build some bikes, because I knew I wanted to go into another engineering job.
Yeah. So were you an apprentice in the world of motorcycles?
No, I was an apprentice, mechanical engineering apprentice. Okay. So I actually used to build cherry pickers, like that. So my forte was production engineering. So lean production engineering, 5S, that sort of stuff, making time and motion studies, making things run efficiently. And that was what I loved doing, and making these machines really run, the production lines run really smoothly. So that's sort of where I come from. And then that sort of the production, the mechanical engineering side of things have obviously helped massively into going to what I do now, which is obviously build custom motorcycles. So I'm very much tied in with the Triumph brand. I'm a Triumph ambassador as well. And we do a lot together. And I've only been working with Triumph for the last couple of years. So when I was initially started, I was building 300, 400 pound bikes and selling them for 1500 quid, £2,000. And I was selling them and flipping them and flipping them and flipping them. And I kind of built up enough money to buy my first sort of Triumph. And I wanted to be working with Triumph, and I saved up all this money and I bought a brand new Triumph bobber, and I did a bit with it and sold it. And then I bought another one, and I did two, and I did two next to each other. And this was every last little penny that I had in the world. I spent about 30 grand. I bought two Triumph bobbers and I supercharged both of them. I built them side by side because I'm a massive risk taker. I'm all about just going all the way in. If it doesn't work, deal with it later. Jump off the cliff and build your wings on the way down, you know. And so I built those bikes, and I sold one to an actor in Hollywood called Ryan Pavey. Yeah. And I sold one to the body coach, Joe Wicks. After I was introduced to him at Triumph event, and I remember walking into this red carpet Triumph event. I think it was the Vauxhall. It's under the arches as a dealership was opening. And I walked in, and my Triumph contact sort of grabbed me and dragged me all the way to back. Jody, you've got to come meet these people. Thrust me into this circle. And they went, Jody, this is Jody. This is the guy I've been telling you about all night. And I was just like, there, like, it's literally like a rabbit in the headlights. Like, who are these people? Like, and I'm just there. I'm like, right, glass of wine, please. Yes, please. I just started talking. And I think it was an interesting one, because that was the night that I met Joe Wicks. He came up to me. He said, I'm Joe Wicks, the body coach. And I'm Joe Wicks. You might know me as a body coach. And I was like, oh, yeah, I slightly recognize it. I said, my brother's got your book. It's been sat on the top of the microwave for months. And I picked it up. Yeah, so I think he kind of gelled after that, because I didn't know who he was. I didn't fanboy. Don't really fanboy over anyone, really, because they're all just normal people. There's an interesting story. I'll probably get onto that later about Goodwood and where I met all these boys on the start line. And But yeah, I just didn't fanboy, and we met up afterwards, and we had a test ride on the Supercharged Bobber, and he bought it. And Joe Wicks was an interesting one, and I hate to keep, but he very much brought Thornton 100 forward so far, because Triumph referred to me as everyone was trying to give him a bike. Ducati trying to give him a bike. Course, Harley trying to give him a bike. Everyone wants to see him riding their bikes, and nobody could sell him a bike. And I sold him four bikes in a year. And Triumph, I remember my Triumph contacts at Triumph, and he said, Jody, I don't know how you've done it. He said, you've sold a bike to the man that can't be sold to, you know? And I said, I don't think I sold anything. I just think I just spoke about how passionate I am about my bikes.
Perfect.
And when I run around them and I'm running around, I get so excited, and I start slurring my words because I'm talking so fast, and I start shaking because I'm getting excited about doing this and doing that. And it just kind of, it was just a natural thing, you know? So when I say about selling my bikes and doing what we do now, which is buying brand new bikes and building them as commissions and then moving on to the customers, is I just get the customer in and I just talk to them about their bike and what it could be and what we could do to it, really, and get excited about it. And I think that's what people like. And so that was 5 years ago I started in a shipping container, and now I've got four staff. There's five of us now. I've got my older brother who's a mechanic. I've got my my guy Alex, who's my CAD designer. I have a guy that literally does marketing, hence why I'm here.
Yep.
And Connor. And and we have Stevie, who does literally follows me around with the camera all day long. We're growing at a rapid rate. The business is interestingly taking another turn, going from motorbike builds to parts. We're sort of moving into parts and merch and that kind of thing, and that side of the business is growing rapidly. And we're operating about 900 square feet right now, and we're moving into just over 4,000 square feet, hopefully by the end of the year, which is a fully custom made kind of premises for us. So we'll have showroom areas, we'll have meeting rooms, sales rooms, lots of sales, sort of a sales suite with big touch screens and renders, and people literally see their bike, and a big office. There's four of us in an office now, which is half the size, I don't know if you call it the size of this little truck, and it's horrendous. Now,
tell me, because I want to take you back to that moment of being thrust into that circle of people. You've got to speak to these people. You've got to meet these people.
Yeah.
I've spoken about this many times. I know that Amy's been very vocal about this before. I don't know where you sit with this, Ant, but this wonderful term called imposter syndrome, which I've suffered from. And still, I still do at certain points. I find myself in situations where I think, I should not be here, surely. Something's happened. I've picked a wrong route somewhere that's got me in front
that
of these people.
That explains my whole life. From day one.
Exactly. Now, I mean, you might tell me now, Jody, no, I always thought I was going to be in that situation. It was always going to be perfect.
Honestly, I was an apprentice. I was a nobody, you know. Yeah. I was just this guy that got his head down and worked hard, you know, and I've always done that. I don't really come from an affluent background at all. You know, I've only just last week exchanged on my new house. It was my first house, so I'm very excited about that. Thank you. And so I still live at home with my mum, so, you know, there's that. Getting thrust into that circle, like you say, was walking in red carpet, champagne, celebrities everywhere, faces that I know from online, and I'm just kind of walking around like, okay. But I like you say, I don't really fanboy about people, and I don't really, if you're just a nice person, then I don't really care.
And like you say, I think it's when you meet somebody that talks with passion about something they have an interest in, you just buy into it. And that could be somebody that's passionate about tea.
They could be,
anything.
Yeah, you can't
speak
help
to somebody with passion, and you're like, you invest in that. You're like, oh, maybe I do love tea as well.
Yeah.
The minute you talk to somebody like yourself that you think you were passionate about the thing I'm passionate about, and then suddenly you think, oh, I want to work with you on a project. Yeah, it must be so wonderful for you to have all these people come to you and be like, I'm really excited. And you're like, me too.
Me too, honestly, we just get excited and a ball of excitement, and then things just go wild. And I'm lucky enough to have these sort of celebrity clients and the more affluent clients that can afford to sort of allow me to run wild with my imagination, you know, because before, when I was building bikes, I wanted to do so much and I wanted to work with all these different technologies that I could never afford. And now it's like, well, if you can afford it, we'll build it, you know, kind of thing. And which is great because we can build whatever you want. And if I don't know how to do it, I'll sit there and I'll learn it. You know, YouTube is a wonderful thing. You know, I didn't know how to weld. I didn't know how to paint. I didn't know how to fabricate. I didn't know how to put motorcycle together. The amount of articles I read, I think it was on BikeXF or BikeBound.com. I remember reading an article on how to build a cafe racer, you know, and lines on a bike and this, that, and the other. But I think kind of as you move through and you just do it, you kind of find your own style and you find out what you like and what works for you. You know, if someone came to me, well, I don't know, I'd have a go at building anything. But if someone came to me and said, you know, Jody, I want a really classic classical cafe racer, and I'd be like, well, it's not really my style, and I don't think anyone would come to me for that. And it's an interesting thing, because I started building, wanted to, that's what I wanted to go into, and I actually ended up, now I just build brand new Triumphs all day long, and which is great, because they are not rusted.
Yeah, I was going to say,
all the bolts you undo,
come undone. No,
all the bolts
trails.
Come undone. No, honestly, you lay underneath it, you take things off, and you don't fill your eyes up with dirt. It's great. It's been a wild journey. But then, going back to what you said about imposter syndrome, you know, yeah, I get thrust into these wild sort of experiences and events that, you know, being at Goodwood, and there's people walking up to me. Well, what I find is the strangest thing is what literally just happened as I drove into the car park. There, a guy came up. Excuse me, I forgot his name, bless him. But he said, I just saw your story about an hour ago. He said, you're coming here, and I just wanted to meet you. And I'm just, and I just kind of come up, and I'm like, it's so strange, because I've almost turned into a mini celebrity. You know, we've got 100,000 subscribers now, and you know, I think we're knocking on for 10 million views on the YouTube. And for me, it's a strange thing, because there's people coming up to me and asking for photos, and you know, and holding babies. No, it's not that bad. Signing chests. No, it's not that bad. Yeah. But it's just that's what I think is surreal for me, is kind of being thrust into almost a mini celebrity type thing. We did an event here not too long ago, and the amount of people that came down and just came to see me was just wild, because I'm just a business owner, and we just build cool stuff, and we just have a lot of fun doing it. But it's great, and I do enjoy it.
Do you feel like you've still got the same level of it being, I don't want to keep focusing on the term imposter syndrome, but do you feel like it's becoming easier to work with, as an example, or is it still a bit strange?
Obviously, my business grew 522% in COVID, in lockdown. So for me, we've kind of come out of lockdown, and I think I went into lockdown with, must have had 20,000 followers on Instagram, and now we've got like 65. And that was due to a lot of what I did. I think when COVID hit, everyone kind of hunkered down, sold all their stuff, pulled all their money in, and just kind of held tight, sit tight.
Sure.
And I remember talking to all these other business owners, and they said, Jody, this is going to be the end of us. You know, this is going to be the end of it. And I kind of noticed a trend actually initially at lockdown, and I was like, my views are through the roof. Everyone's sat at home watching me.
Of course.
And I took this stance that I need to entertain these people. They are sat there watching me. And the amount of messages I got that said, Jody, keep doing what you're doing. You're saving my life right now. I'm so bored. So I literally I took the stance, and I said, I remember going on camera and going, guys, everyone's gone home, everyone's in lockdown, but I'm on my own. You know, I had no employees at this time. This was a year ago, whatever it was. I had no employees, I was on my own. I said, guys, I'm going to entertain you. Watch this. And that's when I built the Speed Triple RS, and that's when I built the world's fastest bobber. And so for me to kind of come out of lockdown and because I haven't been to an event really in lockdown, and kind of come out of it almost being thrust into this almost celebrity style thing, imposter syndrome, going back to what you're saying, is strange, because it's almost, for me, it's out of nowhere, because we're coming out and then all of a sudden everyone knows who I am. You know, I actually got spotted walking down Regent Street, and I was just in civilian clothes. I wasn't even wearing anything. Some guy stopped me and said, can I have a photo? And it's interesting, really. I don't think, I think it will get, I mean, try walking around with Joe Wicks. When you walk around with Joe Wicks, I'm his personal photographer. Because it's like, oh, can we have a photo? Joe, do you mind taking the photo? And it's like, oh God, you know, okay.
It's really cool, though, because I've also walked around with Joe Wicks. He gets stopped every 5 minutes probably, and you just go through an airport. But at the same time, it's amazing to hear, because I remember him talking to me, because we met at a bike event as well, and he talked about you, and he was like, oh, I met this guy called Jody, and you know, he just built these bikes, he's amazing. And the passion that I think your builds has installed into him, and what you must do for all of your other customers as well, is infectious. I mean, when people come to you do they come to you with their own bike and say, I have got this bike and I want you to do, I don't know what to, or do they have a good idea? Do you buy the bike in? How does the process work?
So for me, the process works really, I used to do people's bikes. So what happens now is, if someone wants something, usually I'll just get them in and talk to them. What are you going to use it for? You know, do you want to go and do a tour down south of France? Because if you do, then a bobber's probably not the right thing for you. You know, we might move you onto a scrambler or something like that. And some people want really wild stuff and some people don't. And so I'll get one, ask what they use it for. And once we've established what they're going to use it for, and we've established they want a bobber or a street triple or a T120 or a bobber, a speed or a scrambler or something like that, all in the Triumph range, then we go and buy the brand new bike. The reason being is we know exactly where the bike's been. You know, some people come to me and go, oh, my bike's only got 500 miles. And I'm like, well, that's 500 miles. I don't know what you've done with it.
Plus, you got to clean 500 miles
off
the bike.
Miles worth of dirt.
There's nothing worse than stripping a bike down to build a bike. And then you have to fix all the little things.
Yeah.
And then you're building a brand. You can't give a guy a brand new bike with brand new paint and brand new lovely billet parts and new brakes. And then it's still got to. Skanky looking engine.
Skanky, you know something what I mean? On it. Yeah, and, you know and, I mean? And you'd be surprised how far a bike can deteriorate if it's not looked after. But yeah, so someone comes up, we establish it, they come to me and we buy the bike and basically I build it. And what it is me and my customers build up such a rapport that it's not just only like Joe that kind of guns that goes around and saying how much he loves the process of building a bike. It's all of my customers because it's every day. It's the stories. It's the personal videos that I'm sending them on WhatsApp, backwards and forwards. Do you like this? Do you like that? I'm gonna do it like this. What do you reckon, kind of thing? And for them, it's addictive. And you know, it's like another person who's absolutely addicted. There's a guy that a very well known entrepreneur, one of the youngest billionaires in the UK, Ben Francis, who owns Gymshark. And
of course,
he came to me actually probably 3 years ago now when I really started. He bought it. That was the very first brand new bike that I ever worked on.
Yeah.
Even before the bobber that I bought, and it was a Thruxton R, and he came to me and just said, build it, you know, and me and him built such a good relationship. And I remember giving a huge discount to just say, at the time for me it was anyway, to just say, Ben, give me some of your time, I just want your knowledge, you know. And Ben was only a few years older than me at the time, but I think Ben was 25 or 26 and I was like just only barely 20. Wow. You know, barely 21 22. I just remember saying, give me some of your time. I just sat there with a notepad and I sat there with Ben and I sat there with Noel Mack, the chief brand officer. And I just spoke it out. And I said, and I remember he sat there and he went, Jody, he said, I really love what you do. He said, you're the best of a bad bunch. Here's where you're going wrong. And I just, I sat there like a sponge and I just listened to it. And that's what I've done, not only with Ben and what they had, because he's just a business owner. You know, he makes gym clothes, got nothing to do with. I sat there with Joe and Joe's stance, and it was, Jody, you're building these fantastic bikes, but nobody knows how you do it, and nobody knows who you are. Go on camera. And I and Joe will tell you this as well, is I left his house, and I drove straight to Richmond. I was picking up Brandy. I left his house in Richmond. I drove straight back to Triumph Wellingborough, and I got out of the van, and within that journey, I'd been thinking about it, and I got out, and I turned my phone on, flipped the camera around, and just started talking. And it was from that moment where I was like, right, this is what I'm going to do. And I was so uncomfortable on camera. There's a video actually of me at the Bike Shed show a few years ago. I'd built a Ducati Panigale 1299 and there's so many you know, stutters and stumbles. And now I just kind of roll through it and it's kind of one take, but I've just kind of got a lot more comfortable on camera now. But so the reason I'm on camera so much is very much down to Joe. And he was like, build a personality online and put your face at the front of the business and you'll do well, because it's great, everyone gets to see a polished thing, but nobody gets to see you, nobody gets to see what goes behind in the background. Absolutely. And also I kind of put all my failures there as well, you know, like that bike sat out there, the world's fastest bobber, I blew the engine up, and it was fully my fault. I left the oil pump off, you know, disconnected, and I rode it for like 5 miles, and this was I think it was on the Wednesday that I blew it up, and we were unveiling it on Sunday. Oh. And I documented the whole process. If you go on my profile, you'll be able to see a little story highlight that says WFB engine, and that was literally me going, guys, I messed up. I'm going to rebuild this engine. Watch me do it. And there's literally a story of me there till 2 o'clock in the morning fixing it. And so many people just went, you want fair play? Because there's sounds a bit saucy out there. there's very much this everything is perfect online, you know. And everything that everyone does is perfect online, and it's not, you know. Sometimes we get it wrong. Sometimes I blow my engine up and it costs me thousands of pounds to fix it. And I fully hold my hands up to that. Sometimes I design a part wrong and it doesn't work and we have to do it again and again and again and get it right. You know, sometimes we'll have five or six iterations or prototypes of a part before we get it right, and I'll show you what we're doing on each one and what's different and what's wrong. And that's kind of as well what the customer gets involved in, because they're waiting for their bike. And everything that goes wrong is another delay.
Absolutely.
But it's another part of the journey as to when we're building their bike. So
you got it. And I think that's the thing. The credit to you, Jody, here is obviously the ability to pick up that camera for the first time, stutters and all, and, you know, failures and ums and ahs and things like that. But it's a true personality. It's what the people want to see.
Yeah.
And likewise with the failures. Nobody wants to hear, oh, yeah, you know, it was easy. I just build bikes and it's always a success and it's great. Because firstly, nobody's going to believe you.
Yeah.
And what do you mean? I've never had a problem with the bike. It's always been gravy with me. Always.
Of course, the thing is, it's such a creative process. And in the same way as taking photos for Amy is a creative process. Mm-hmm. Audio editing can be a creative process, video creation, painting, anything that involves something that is relies on your creative self is a true reflection of your own personality.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you show that personality?
Absolutely, you know, and I think my personality has really kind of come through on camera, and I, you know, I'm the same person at home that I am here, you know. It's just, and it's easy to be that because it's just natural.
Absolutely.
And all I had to get used to was just talking to a lens, you know, because it's where you're not looking at someone's eyes when you're talking to them. Yeah. You're looking into this black hole and there's nothing, you know, and it's like you're trying to be almost build a rapport and talk people through, and that was an interesting.
Try not to swear.
Yeah,
try not to swear too much.
There's a funny one because I actually used to work with a guy who was my cameraman before I had a full time cameraman, and when we went our separate ways, and it was completely amicable. It was time for us to split. He was doing full time stuff, and he sent me a montage of every swear word that I'd ever done, and it was about 2 minutes of me of just beeps, which was great. Me talking about how good things were, or how bad things were, or how it went wrong, and you know, and it was just a full 2 minute montage of swearing. But that just means you're passionate, right?
You know, it's passionate, and there's another. I'm sure there's a video somewhere of Stephen Fry talking about swearing, and it's brilliant. But whether it's in the same video that I'm thinking of, but there's somewhere along the line, Stephen Fry announced, and if Stephen Fry tells me anything, I believe him. It's apparently a sign of honesty.
Yeah.
Those that are more comfortable swearing in casual conversation, we don't tend to swear in this podcast, but I promise you we're all very honest. Apparently, casual swearing is a sign of honesty because it shows you're more open and you're more kind of foregoing without trying to hide things or hold things
exactly
back.
That, you know, I mean, I can talk to a customer and I'll just sit there and walk them through it, and I'll get so passionate the swear words just fly out left, right, and centre. But I think they kind of find it funny as well because I'm running around like a mad professor talking about these things that I'm going to do, and they kind of, that's how they buy in as well. You know, I'm not sat there in front of a billionaire customer, you know, all suited and booted and talking,
pretending you don't say four letter words. All
yeah,
day long,
that's
you know
it.
I mean?
You know, and pretending to be this person. I'll run around with holes in my t-shirt because I burnt it with the welder, you know, and I'll just run around with helmet hair because I've had the welding hat on all day, and run around getting excited, and I think they just buy into it like that, you know. Yeah. So I think that's what it's all about, really, and just being open and honest and letting my personality kind of come through, really, and building a personality online is kind of helping, really. And
definitely
people feel it's interesting because people kind of walk up to me and at events and they talk to me and go, "Hi, Jody," and I'm like, "I've never seen this person before."
Or have I seen this person?
Or have
before?
I seen this person? Yeah.
Got to go and with the old, "Oh gosh, so good to see you."
Yeah, exactly that. And it's happened a few times, and I've just kind of try and ride it out. And it was quite funny, actually. It happened actually not too long ago, and the boys were behind me. They kind of came up and said, "Hi, Jody," and I gave it the whole, "Oh, hi." And they were like, "That was so obvious, you didn't know who that was." Really bad. But that's an interesting one because people feel like they know you online. When your personality comes through, people, they do feel like, you know, they know you, and I've got no idea who they are. And
you're
just
in everybody's hand.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
At their leisure. That's the crucial thing to always point out is, again, this is something that a lot of people don't realise. We who are often in front of cameras or especially social media, we are viewed at the viewer's leisure.
Yeah.
And that might be sat down after work on the sofa. It might be sat on the toilet. It might be sat on a plane somewhere. At the point of your downtime as the viewer, you look at who you want to look at. And then suddenly you see that person who's not in your downtime and you go, "Hey, it's you, the person that I always look at when I'm sat on the toilet."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I hope there's not too many situations of that. I'd like to delve, if possible, into the creative process. And I'd be interested in learning about your creative process, Jody, and what goes the journey from once the client has specified a bike, right, it's going to be a Bobber or a Thruxton, whatever it's going to be. What is your creative process and journey? And I'd like to hear, because of course we have another bike builder sat in here with us, Ant, I'd like to see how your processes compare and if it's completely different, because you make quite different products, the two of you.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to hear how, maybe Ant, if you start off
funny,
with how...
Because I kind of started, I kind of started where you start, like I've been building bikes now. I was about to swear there. about probably almost 20 years now, which is weird because you're 25 and I'm just sitting across from you going, "How are you 25?
Yeah.
My daughter's 21. Like I look in the mirror, I'm like, I'm not that old. I used to build only Harley. I literally back when I started, if it was a custom bike, it was only Harley. Anything else was no. it wasn't a custom bike. You know what I mean? Harley kind of owned that territory.
They did. They've owned it for a very long time.
And they still kind of think they do. You know what I mean? But you know what I mean?
We look at each other.
I don't know. I disagree.
You know, we all know the kind of struggles between the brands. But Harley kind of owned that for...
They did.
I don't know, 50, since the Hells Angels, since the 60s, they kind of owned custom bikes, really. And then, you know, it wasn't till I got involved with Yamaha and I did a yard build, which kind of brought me out of my Harley kind of comfort zone. I could build a Harley with my eyes closed. So I built a Yamaha, and then it kind of opened up kind of what I did. And then I was like, this is way better, because Yamaha, it's got good brakes, it's got good suspension. All they got to do is make it look good, and make it a bit lighter, make it go around corners. But I can, you know what I mean? All we've got to do is build what the manufacturers can't build, because the manufacturers have to put indicators on that are a certain size. They have to put mirrors on a certain size. They have to put, you know, the brakes that they can afford to put a million brake, you know, and tires that, you know, that go through all their kind of process.
It's all homologation, and
we get the fun bit of stripping all that off and building the bike that the designer wanted to build in the first place. I think, you know what I mean?
If he
says, okay, no rules, go at it, this is what you got to do, and that's what we build, and then we get to do that, and we get to put all the really lovely parts on. And I guess going back into the process, what you ask, like before, I just stuck with Brand, you work with Triumph. I used to work with Harleys back in the day, but it kind of opened up, and I was quite happy building kind of that and just sticking to what I was doing. But when it got to the point where, not that I wasn't challenging myself, but it was like, okay, it's another Harley, and then I was like, okay, well, Yamaha came along, I built a Yamaha, and then I was like, oh, well, that's cool. Why don't I build a Ducati? And then I built a Ducati, and then it was like, and then I'm like, you know what? I don't want a pencil. Like a lot of builders, I think there's a lot of builders around the world that are kind of build one kind of bike, and they're known for that kind of bike. And I was like, I don't want to be known for the kind of bike I build. I want to be known for the quality of bike I build, and the finish, and the performance, and the what style kind of bike. Not so much an aesthetic style, but a riding style, because I like to ride bikes like an idiot. You know what I mean? And I think anybody that rides motorcycles, if they tell you that they abide by the speed limits, they're complete liars. You cannot ride a bike the speed limit. Yeah. There's no reason. Like, look at those bikes. All of those will do, maybe bar the one Amy's riding, will all do close to 200 kilometers an hour, if not, you know, more.
Not more, yeah.
Especially with the superchargers on there, you got. Yeah. But I kind of veered off, and I thought, I just wanted, if someone says, hey, build me a Vincent. Like, I've got a client now that I'm about to start a build with a Vincent. I've never built a Vincent before, but it's new territory. So for me, I want to do different bikes. You know, I'm doing a flat track race bike for myself right now. I've done Enfield for a guy in Canada, and then I've got this Vincent. And the Vincent is just literally a motor. I'm going to buy a brand new motor and build everything from scratch. And I've never built a bike from scratch. I always used to build bikes from a frame or from a donor bike. And so this is kind of the flat track racer is kind of that, but what I'm doing now with the Vince is going to be completely one off. And the process has always kind of been a bit different. The process with the client's always the same. They come in and they've kind of seen what I've done, or they've seen me on TV or on the internet or whatever, and they've liked a previous bike. But I'll always try to veer a client into what, even if they come in with something that they've, their dream bike. And not saying that a lot of people, like, unless they've had loads of bikes their whole life and they know and they've raced and they've done all sorts of things on bikes, then they know exactly what they want. But 9 times out of 10, you've got guys with the kind of money that want to spend, you know, 50-100 grand on a bike. They kind of, they've got a collection of bikes, maybe they ride a bit, but they don't know exactly what things can do on, you can do on a bike and how it handles, and they just want kind of an aesthetic look. And I kind of always push them into the performance side of it. And, you know, how do you, like what you said, you know, how do you want to ride the bike? Mm-hmm. Is it just a bike you're going to take out on Sundays? Because then there's no need to put, you know, 12 grand Olin front forks on it. You know, it makes no sense.
Or a big tank, you need fuel capacity, you need this, you need that.
So, you're going to do a long ride, and kind of figure out how they want to ride the bike. And then I kind of, you know, if they've got some, outlandish ideas. Sometimes they come to you and they're like, "Hey, I want a 300 series back tire," and I want, I'm like, "You've got the wrong guy." You know what I mean?
If you're stuck, I was going to ask actually, and for both of you, have you ever had a client come in who's come up with an idea that's so far out of your,
yeah,
I don't want to say comfort zone, but it's just not you that you've said, "You know what? I'm not your guy."
Probably 75% of my clients I send away.
Wow.
Wow.
I don't really. I think people come to me and they know what I do.
True.
I think people come to me for a style. I have said no. The thing that I say is, if it comes out of my workshop, it's going to be a Thornton 100. If we're going to put a stamp on it, it's got to look good. Yeah, some of my customers come to me. I obviously can't say any names, but they've just, in my eyes, absolutely no taste.
I like that.
Gold, this, they want this, that, and the other, and it's really gaudy and blingy, and I kind of look at it and go, you know, if I'm going to put Thornton 100 badge on that, it's got to look right. And I think it's a gentle persuasion and a massaging into a different direction. How about this idea? This would be so much better, you know, and that's a case of,
and usually
sales
they go
psychology,
along with that,
that
you know what
really,
I mean? They
that's,
kind of take that, no?
Yeah, like say, you know, that's, but like you say, that really is, that's a, just a case of dealing with your customers, knowing your customers as well. But I think people come to me, they know what they want usually, and they're coming to us for Thornton 100, and they know it's going to be classy and slick and well built and well finished, and, you know, and that, and it kind of works like that, really. But
Can I get you, where do you get your inspiration from when you're creating these things?
So it's an interesting one, actually, because we've almost gone down the route of, a lot of people will come, like, we do a lot of bobbers, we do a lot of wide wheel bobbers, and I've almost built this style that is instantly recognizable as a Thornton 100 bike, and a lot of people will come to me and go, "I want a Thornton 100 wide wheel bobber," and it's like, well, okay, great, well, realistically, that's the same wheels, the same triple clamps, the same seat mount, the same everything that goes into the same ingredients, same base ingredients, and then we'll tweak it. Well, we say we never build the same thing twice, so if it's a different color, if it's supercharged, if it's got a different style of exhaust, if it's got this and the other. So for those types of builds, they're the same base bike, same ingredients. So the creative process for that, like in terms of actual the outline of the silhouette and the chassis and everything of the bike, is the same. And I think when we go down this route of something like the bike that I'm building for Joe Wicks right now, which is Thruxton RS, is very much comes out of my head, you know. And I work very closely with Alex, my CAD designer, and I'll scribble something on a bit of paper, a tissue, and I'll cut up a cereal box, and I'll go, "It should look about like this," you know, kind of thing, and do it. I'm terrible at drawing as well. And I'll just go, even to the point of the subframe on that Speed Triple RS out there, I just kind of knew I wanted some swooshy swoops, and I just kind of drew this with some swage lines in it, and it didn't even look like a subframe. It was just a crazy line that kind of wrapped around and some swage lines that went up and then faded in. And then from that, I work very closely with a CAD designer, because I can CAD to an extent, not like these guys can. These guys are wizards, you know.
It is wizardry, that stuff.
And I think for me, it's know your limits, know what you're good at, and stick to it.
Yeah.
So I just kind of drew this kind of doodle of just lines, and I said, this has got to be on this part, this has got to be on that part. And I think, it just comes out of my head, really. I think I'll see, you can get inspiration from anywhere, really. You can look at a supercar and go, "Oh, I love how that sort of canard sort of hangs off the side of it, and I love the angle of that," and it just amalgamates in your head, and then it just kind of regurgitates itself as this kind of doodle, and then the difficult thing is transferring that into a part that looks correct, you know, and sits correctly on the bike, and the lines are right, and from all the angles it looks like it's meant to be there. So that's an interesting process to do. It's very much all about communication and having a tight-knit team, and me and my guys, we do a very good job, and we're very close, you know, and we all work very closely together to create is the Thornton 100 experience and brand and bikes.
How much research do you do into your client before, let's say, from the initial phone call point of view? Do you do a bit of an Instagram stalk and see, all right, this guy's got a collection of 200 classic Ferraris,
is it
so that
weird?
Might kind of sway into your design vision? Or
everyone gets Googled. Who is this person? I mean, I think you have to, really.
Sure.
I think, you know, because you can get a better understanding of the client, you know, because I think if, you know, you Google them and, you know, they turn out to be this kind of crazy affluent billionaire, for example, you know, and you not that you take advantage, it's just that you
don't put that discount that you thought you'd have to give to the regular client to get them in the door.
Well, we don't discount anymore. We don't really do that anymore. But what it allows me to do is and do a bit of stalking online, you know, and find out what their style is, and then kind of put to them almost a package or a mood board of something that fits with them. You know what I mean? Because I could go to them and go, right, you know, you can spend 30 grand on this bike and it would be a nice bike and it would be really nice and you can go out and ride it and it'd be a Thornton 100 and it'd be this, that and the other. But if you realize that who they are or what they are and that they've got money, and this is me my business head on now, you know, and you know, there's a lot more available, and that's when I'm allowed to go crazy with my ideas. Sure. Because I can go, oh, you could gold plate this, or you could have a crazy supercharger, or we turbocharge it, we build the engine, and we can go to the moon with it, you know. And I think that's why, you know, I think a fair bit of research and background, as much as you can, will help you, help me as a business to run the business, because at the end of the day, we're trying to make money. You know, I've got me and four young lads who all want to buy a house, and we're all basically under 25. They've all got car finance, they've all got mobile phones and stuff to pay for. So at the end of the day, we all have to make money, know. So I think that's me with my business head on. That's an interesting one, because I'm not a businessman. I didn't go to business school. You know, I don't come from money. Understanding money and how to spend it, and you know, which is probably why I'm still quite reckless with it and risk taking, you know, and just go, right, we're doing it, you know, kind of thing, and just do it. And you know, I think that's probably quite good, because a lot of people just kind of reel it in. I don't seem to have the ability to do that yet. So
with that in mind, let's just imagine, I don't know much about your family background, or let's say there's a young cousin or a family friend who's maybe 16 17 18, he's coming to you with these ideas, I want to do this as a business, a similar thing, maybe not building bikes, but they might, in your opinion, might be a bit reckless with money. It's a younger version of you, perhaps.
Yeah.
Are you going to sit there and go, do you know what, just go for it, figure it out, see how you get on? Or would you give, if you could advise younger self?
If I was going to, well, do you know what pushed me over the edge? And it was just one sentence. All I needed was, obviously I still live at home now with my mum, as hopefully for the next 2 weeks. What it was for me was, I was sat there and I was 20, and I was really upset as well. I was literally sat there, head in my hands, and I was just moping around, and I was like, what am I going to do? You know, I've left this apprenticeship kind of thing. And she went, Jodie, start the business. She went, obviously, I'm fortunate enough to, you know, my mum, she sort of turned around and said, Jodie, you've got roof over your head, and I'm going to feed you. And I went, you know what? What more do you need than that? You're not going to go hungry, and you're not going to be cold and homeless. You know, and I think looking back at that, that's really what pushed me over the edge, because it was like, do you know what? If I run out of money, if it all goes wrong, you know, as long as I don't get myself into hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of debt and my mum loses her house or whatever, after more, you know, then it will be all right. You know, so I think that's what kind of pushed me over the edge. So I think if I was talking to 16-year-old Jolly, I'd just go, just do it. Just get your head down. But if you're going to do it, you have to commit 110%. You absolutely have to be there at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning when your eyes are burning. You know, you absolutely have to spend all that money on that bike. So you get a twitchy bum moment because you don't know if you can afford to do this, something other. You do miss out on nights out. Of course, you know, when I was an apprentice, I was working, it was quite a well-paid apprenticeship, and I used to work at the weekends, in the family business as well, and I was hustling on eBay on the side, and I had a few motorbikes that I'd built, and I had a BMW M5. My M5 was my kind of, that was my special treat to 19-year-old Jodie, is this toy, you know.
Was it an E39 so hard.
It was an E60 with a 5-litre.
E60, my
the
God.
Worst financial decision I've
How
ever made.
How much was your insurance on a V10 M5 at that age?
It was absolutely disgusting. So that was my... But you know, going back to talking to 19/20-year-old Jodie, it was sell your bikes, sell your cars. I didn't have anything, you know, apart from my toolbox and building bikes and this idea that one day I'll be wealthy enough to buy it all back again, you know. And I think you know, that's just what you got to do, you know, just get your head down. But if you're going to do it, you've absolutely just got to commit. And if you don't commit, then if you're not in it, if you still think you can go drinking at the weekend with all your mates, if you still think that you can afford, if you've got a car on front, you got a Golf GTI or whatever, you know, you're 16 17 18, whatever, you got to get rid of it. It's got to go. Every single last little £100 that you've got is got to go into this business, and every little last little inch of you has got to go into it too. And if you don't do that, then for me, I didn't think it would work. So that's what I did, and that's still what I'm doing now. You know, and so that's the advice I would give, really, a kind of an entrepreneurial thing, really, which is an interesting thing, because I don't really class myself as an entrepreneur. I just think I just build motorbikes and expect people pay me for it. You know,
that's it, and that's what makes it special.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I really hope that there's a fair few people at home listening to this or wherever they are who maybe are at that point in their life. And again, you don't need to be a 16, 17-year-old to be at that point in your life. You might have had a career for 15, 20 years already, but always aspired to just take that leap. And I hope that you've maybe turned on a light bulb.
I turned on a light bulb. I had a podcast with a guy called Teapot One and Bruce, and he's fantastic. But I seem to find that my energy towards the whole business type thing, and where I've told him about where we were going and this, that, and the other, and he came out of it, and the podcast finished, actually, and he went, "Jody, I'm so rolled up to just do something with my life." Yeah, and he was like, "I just want to get out and do something, you know." And I was like, "Well, that's great, you know." And I think the only thing that you have to think about then is you've got kids, you've got a house, you've got a mortgage, and this, that, and the other. But I was lucky enough at the time I didn't have anything. And I think there's obviously, as you get older, there's certain factors that come into it that you have to consider. For me at the time, I was just like, right, I'm just going to do it. And I still think I'll always maintain that sort of mentality, you know. And if you don't take risks, it's not going to come, you know.
Of course.
Fortune favours the brave, and you just got to do it sometimes. And that's what it's about.
Do you think it'll always be bikes?
I think the Thornton 100 brand can carry a lot of stuff. I think Thornton 100 can carry merchandise. I think it can carry the parts. I think it can carry bikes. I think it can carry a cafe chain, perhaps a steak and bar and grill chain. It could potentially carry accessories, you know, wallets and watches and, you know, this, that and the other. So I think it would turn into a lifestyle brand. I think we're making it cool, you know, but I think there's no reason why Thornton 100 couldn't be the next Belstaff or Barber, or, you know, we could go into making riding kit and they, well, know, something terrible goes wrong and they all just kind of fall off the face of the planet, and Thornton 100's right there, because it will be. We'll be right there, straight in, you know, and jumping at every single opportunity that we can get, really. And hopefully if we just keep doing that, we'll grow it. And I want Thornton 100 to be one of the biggest, most recognisable bike brands in the world. And I've still got, if you ask me, a lifetime to do it. And as long as I don't get it wrong, you know, I think we'll be all right, you know. And we're doing it for 5 years, and if I can do it for another, I don't know, 50 years, then that would be fantastic. Yeah. So.
Now, I mean, thinking about the future, Amy and I, before we started recording, we were talking about electrification of bikes, weren't we?
Yes, I wanted to ask about this. So with, obviously, when you've got a motorcycle with two wheels, an engine, with forks, it's something that we've understood what it looks like since motorbikes were first designed. When it comes to electric motorcycles, surely that's going to change the way that you look at design of bike or customization, because suddenly we've got this big block in the middle. You've got the basic form of motorcycle still, but it's very different to what we're used to looking at now. Is that something you've thought about, how you'd start customizing electric bikes? Is that something, I take it, you will end up going into, but I'm assuming here, what's your thoughts around this?
Absolutely, we'll have to go into electric motorcycle manufacturing, you know, at some point. I want to, you know, we're doing as much as we can to be environmentally conscious, you know. Anyway, you know, we've got big recycling bins. We literally separate everything that gets done. All of our prototyping is done in recyclable PLA, you know, and we're trying to do as much, even to the bottles of water, you know, and these bottles and cans of water now that are like literally recyclable, like cardboard cartons and stuff like that. We're trying to do. So I think electrification is going to come anyway, and it's kind of bringing its way into, working its way in. It's interesting. I've literally had this conversation quite a few times, because I think as battery technology and improves, I don't think we're going to have a big block in the middle of something. You know, I think we'll still have two wheels and a set of handlebars with brakes on, and I think, and a motor. And I think that's just about where it ends, really, as to what I think an electric motorcycle should look like, really, because it doesn't need a fuel tank. It doesn't need, you know, whatever it is, that it doesn't need exhaust, you know, it doesn't need any heat management, it doesn't need loads of electronics, it doesn't need all the kind of things. So I think as it moves on, I don't think we'll need that. I think we're, at the end of the day, you need set handlebars here, you need seats set on, you need your foot pegs in the right place, and the wheels in the right place, and everything in between is completely open to anyone's interpretation as to what it could be. That's because it doesn't need to be that. You know, it doesn't need to be a conventional motorcycle anyway. So I think if we do go down that route of, we say for some reason we create our own electric motorcycle, I don't think it needs to look particularly much like a motorcycle, as long as everything's in the right place. And you know, it's exciting because you're not tied into a conventional motorcycle design. You don't need it at all. You know, it could be a big open gap.
So much,
you know,
less work as well. Like, if you think of a lot of the work that we do, like, look, you've got two out there, you know, two massive engine superchargers, all the mechanics and all the engineering that's gone into, you know, housing of brackets and plumbing and wiring and all that's gone.
It's gone.
It's exactly gone.
Yeah.
So all we have to do is make something really sexy.
Yeah.
And that handles really well.
Yeah, that's exactly, you know what I mean? It. You know, and it doesn't need to conform.
I'm up for, like, I quite, you know, a lot of people poo-poo electric bikes, but I enjoy them. You know what I mean? I think no one's come out with a sexy one yet. I think Harley.
They've had a go.
That's nice. Have you ridden it yet?
Yeah.
It's fantastic ride. The only thing is you hit the brakes and you're just like, this thing is so heavy because it's so fast.
Yeah.
You literally point. If you point at the shed over there, and you just open the throttle, you're there. Yeah. And you're like, Jesus Christ! And you got to hammer the brakes. And it's got great brakes on it, but they're not good enough for the weight of that bike.
Yeah.
And you know, that bike's not a sport bike. And you can put the best suspension, best brakes, best tires on it, but because of the mass of that bike, you'll never do. You know what I mean? You won't be able to ride it like it's a super bike. And you know what I mean? So it's always going to have that tendency. You hammer the front brake, the front end's gonna wash out, you know, because of the weight inertia of that bike. But I think as you say, the battery technology is gonna get better, you know, the power plant's gonna get smaller, you know, and there's a few companies making sexy, you know, drivetrain units at the moment, or developing them. So I think it's an interesting time, you know what I mean? I'm not saying I'm full electric, but you know, I love to play in that space, and like I said before, I kind of like, I'll do anything, you know. If it's new to me, I'm like, yeah, I'll have a go at that.
Yeah.
I'll do something cool, you know what I mean?
So it's interesting what you say about we're not quite there with electric, and we yet to see a hybrid bike, you know, something with a little 600cc engine with a little 50 horsepower little electric motor backing it up. You
whip
know,
around London on the electric and then get ahead on the
that's
road.
That's
it, and
you know, that's it.
It.
And, you know, I think Triumph's sort of render of the TE1 that they sort of were flirted with the idea a few months ago, you know, that came out, and that, I think they're, and
correct, do they have a Williams sticker on the side of that power plant?
What's that, sorry?
Is that the picture that they posted?
Literally tiniest little motor like that.
Yeah, it's like a little box.
I think
it say
like,
Williams on it?
Yeah, I think they're working with Williams on it. Yeah, literally that engine was putting out like 160 or 180 horsepower, something like that. I can't remember the exact weight, but it was something silly. It was only like...
With 100% torque.
It was like 20 kilos, something like this. It was 10 or 20 kilos, this engine. It was just horrendous. You know, it's just this thing, you know. But it's an interesting thing going, looking at electric motors, you know, because the torque on that is essentially, you can't work your way around physics, and the physical size of a motor is, the bigger it is the more powerful it's going to be, because you have more leverage. It's like gearing, you know. I don't think you're never going to accept, you're never going to escape that, you know. So packaging is going to be an interesting thing, and seeing how fast you can make bikes, but I think, like you say, it's all to do with battery technology, it's all to do with power management. I think you know, if we can superconducting cables and stuff like that, but you know, by the time you start running that much power through things, you're going to start interfering with other stuff, and interfering with CAN bus signals, and interfering with, you know, everything that's running there. I met a guy once that literally his job was to wire cars, but his job was to deal with the interference between everything. Everything has to be twisted, everything has to be sheathed, everything has to be the correct everything, so you don't get noise on interference or things that start making other things go wild. So I think we have interesting mechanical and hot
CAN bus came out. Well, actually, you're 25, so you probably started building. You started building bikes with CAN bus. I kind of had to learn, like, because everything we built up until 2000, more because I was still building Harleys until like 2016. But like Harley was all like analog, so to say, non-CAN bus up until 2013, 14. They started putting on Dynas, and we bought a Dyna for a client, and he was a good client. And so we bought this bike and bought all these parts and got everything in-house before we started the build. And I tear off the handlebars and I open up the switch housing and it's just a little pad with buttons. I'm just like, oh, there's a circuit in it. What am I going to do with this? Yeah. So half the parts I bought wouldn't work. So literally we had to figure out how a friend of mine, I used to build super yachts and he's an electrical engineer and I used to work with him all the time. And so I gave it to him and he literally custom built like switch housings out of the original ones and kind of sunk them into like a little tray. And you know that resin you put
potting,
in the back of the
compound. Yeah. You literally back it. Yeah. Yeah.
So literally we kind of drilled out all the, where the buttons went in the switch pad and fed in a wire and he soldered it all up. And then literally we sealed those up, put them under the seat and ran wires from those up to the front of the buck.
It's an interesting, process, like you say, because,
Canbus is now, sorry. I don't know much about, Triumphs because I've never built a Triumph, but with Harleys, with CAN bus, they have now an emulator. So for example, if you're going to change a part, an indicator or something like that, it doesn't, you have a little box where you kind of wire things into the box and then it goes, so you kind of you don't have to like
go into
redo all the wiring, go into the ECU and
go
all
into
that.
ECU, yeah. So it's an interesting one because I've done that, I've done all of that, you know, and The goal is to make the bike think that it's completely standard. Think that it's standard because that way you can maintain all of your sensors, you can maintain all of your traction control, your ABS, all of your anti-wheelie, everything like that. It's just a case of extending and repackaging, but you can't always extend because sometimes you extend wires. I did on that Speed Triple RS, we extended and chopped and changed, and then all of a sudden the resistance values are all different.
Of course. Yeah.
And then you get into the case of getting a standard loom, measuring the resistance, shortening your loom, wiring in resistors to get your wires the correct resistance all the way along there. And so it's either go down that route, and I've struggled really a lot with my bobber outside, my world's fastest bobber, because we actually had it running at the power that it's at on a standard ECU, and we had it running on completely standard engine management, and we basically fooled it and made it think it was doing something else, and it wasn't, which is very difficult to do and not very reliable, because every now and then these Triumphs are so clever that you know, if it sees a wheel speed it doesn't like, it sees an engine speed, it goes, hold on, why are you doing 120 mile an hour in third gear? You know, sometimes it will go, nope. And I actually spoke to one of the chief engineers actually on the bobber project, and he went, yeah, it won't let you do that. There's a hierarchy of fail safes built in.
Of course,
if it doesn't see something you'll like, it will drop you down to another power level. If it doesn't see something you like, it will just cut you off or go in limp mode or this and the other. And there's a big chain of events that will happen. So my bobber has complete standalone ECU, complete standalone digital dash. We wrote everything for it. It's completely custom.
And you're still able to keep things like traction control if you want to?
So we're able to keep traction control. I don't run it with traction control at the moment. We started developing it, and traction control is just, it's quite simple. Is you see a wheel speed at the front, you see wheel speed at the back, and that's done with a Hall effect sensor and an ABS ring with a pulsar ring, which is just sends an electrical signal. And then your ECU will read those signals, and they'll know, right, this one's spinning at this fast, this one's spinning this fast. If I will allow a discrepancy of 5%, 3%, you know, and you can have different traction control modes that we can write into this as well. And that's pretty simple to do. And it's the same with anti-wheelie as well. And having something like that on the bike, that type of electronic is great because there is no limit as to how crazy you can go. We're actually developing an app right now, the world's fastest bobber app. So I can sit here on my phone, I can pull my phone out right now, turn the bike on and look at it out there, turn the ignition on and then start it up on my app, and I'll have a slider bar like this, and I can literally engage launch control and have it sat there spitting flames using a slider bar on my phone, you know, and that's all just done through Bluetooth, and it's done, you know, and that's just done through an app, you know, writing a pretty simple app. And you would never be able to do that with standard electronics, you know, and now we've got this, and I worked with a very, very, very wildly clever electronics engineer, you know, two different guys actually, one just literally writes software and another one is physical. And I just kind of say I want this and I want that, you know, and kind of we all kind of come together and create this crazy idea that we just do it. So yeah, CAN bus is a nightmare on a standard bike, but can be a blessing because there's no limit as to how crazy you can go with when you get it completely custom like it is on my bike.
Love it. The future sounds quite exciting, be that electrification. I mean, I personally hope that certainly for bikes, the petrol engines stick around just for a little bit longer.
I honestly don't think they're going anywhere. I think electric bikes are just going to be another thing that we do.
I think so too. But then I also think that of all the things that can be electrified, the little toys, as we like to think of them, the bikes, it kind of works. Like, I do see the value in electric motorcycles. I've not done a lot of riding on electric motorcycles at all yet, but the ones I have ridden, I've thought, I can kind of see why this is fun. And I don't know, maybe that's that initial, like, this is new and exciting and fun. Like, the first time you drive a Tesla, you go, oh, this is fun and exciting. Then you drive one around for about 20,000 miles, you go, oh, it's actually a bit rubbish.
Off-road's quite good because, you know, when you're in the forest,
yeah,
you're not pissing people off. The biggest thing with, like, in Spain, horse, we ride all the time, and we're always pissing off somebody. They call the police. Police show up, and then you get chased through the woods, and, you know, if they catch you, they take your bike. Yeah. You know what I mean? Especially if you're riding on a non, because there's only a certain section you're allowed to ride on. We always ride the fire cuts and all the fun stuff. So if they catch you, you know, you lose your bike, and it's a nightmare. But and, like, I don't know what it's like. I haven't ridden much enduro here, but I know, like, if you green lane, there's a lot of people that get pissed off, especially when you got you're on 300 two stroke, you know, just pinned, and you know, you're gonna get people to get pissed off.
It's the noise. I think that you have no noise, and it's
you're not upsetting all the wildlife as well.
Yeah.
Okay, I think there's a little bit of danger there where you come around a corner silently, and you've got like five hikers walking around the corner.
You're coming around sideways for a mile an hour. You know,
taking a family on an early morning. But other than that, like, I was just out in Saint-Tropez riding racing ride cakes. You know those, you know, Swedish. Mm-hmm. Electric bikes, and we had an absolute blast. And it was like, okay, I think they've got a long way to go, but, you know, the concept is fantastic. And I think they're, you know, I haven't ridden the Surons yet. Have you seen the Surons?
I've seen the Surons, yeah.
I've sat on one. My buddy's kind of an importer of them, and I think they look fun.
I'm yet to really. I've ridden a live wire, not very far, just up and down the street, and I'm yet to really sort of experience a long time on an electric bike. It'd be an interesting thing. I always looked at the KTM e-freeride and went, that looks great, but I was never too impressed with the power figures power to weight. It was just like, you know. But yeah, I think something like they say, the cake, which is just stripped back, bare bones, and like you say, it doesn't look like a motorbike. Yeah, but at the end of the day, it's kind of in between.
Like, what I found with that is the front wheel washed out because we were up in this vineyard. It was amazing, out in the woods, but it was really dry, and it was really kind of, you come into a corner, it's a little bit sandy, a little silty, and it kind of it's almost like the front end wanted to wash out on every corner, so you just kind of had to adapt your style to and just cane it in corners and just kind of drift it around and ride it kind of motocross style. And you really got used to it, but like you go near a jump and you just pin it, and you're just like, the thing, it was the first time you hit the jump, you're kind of you suck, you know what I mean, because you get scared and you don't know how it's going to react. So the second time you hit it and you kind of like suck as well, but you go a bit further, and then the third time you're like, okay, now I've got it, and you get over the tabletop and land on the other side. But it's kind of a new learning process, because it's, you know, with engine, you know where you are, you know where the engine's revving, you know where the gears are, you know what I mean? You can kind of tell how your wheel's spinning in the air, and you can, you know, and plus you don't have a foot brake. Mm-hmm. So that at first I was like, you're trying to find the foot brake, and you're like, it's not there, and you're like, you overshoot a corner, you stack it into some trees or something, you know what I mean?
But then
once you get used to it, I really like the back brake on my left hand. You know what I mean? Because then you're like a kid again. You just picture yourself locking up your back wheel at every corner. You kind of got like the motorbike power, but you've got this electric, like this bicycle kind of style of riding.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting riding those cakes. We had an absolute blast.
Yeah.
But
I'd love to have a go on one.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, we are bound as ever by the constraints of time, but before we wrap things up, I think it'd be nice to, obviously, I'm sure if you haven't done so already, dear listener, please do check out the Thornton 100 Instagram feed, because that for me is a great go-to just to see the products that are out there, some really, really incredible bikes. And there may be some people that have already done so, and there may be a question that that is now humming around in people's heads, which is, how much is one of these things going to cost me? Now, I know this is, before I put you on too much of an awkward spot, I know that this is almost an impossible question to answer, because, of course, everything's going to be different. It depends on the build, depends on the time. But considering, you know, we can all Google how much new Triumph costs, and if it's a Bobber or a Thruxton R or an RS or whatever it may be, Is there a ballpark figure that people need to be ready to have in their account? Or,
yeah,
or
absolutely. Absolutely there is. You know, I think the average spend for one of my customers is probably 33 or 34,000, you know, and that for that, you know, you can get into a scrambler or a wide wheel bobber or a T120 or a Thruxton quite comfortably, you mm-hmm. know, and I think, you know, starting at 30,000 kind of thing is a good sort of idea, you know, and they could go, the sky's the limit, you know, if you want Cartier watch in the sunk into the tank or whatever, you know, it's fine, that's great, I'll do it, you know, that sounds fantastic. But, you know, I think, you know, looking at the early 30s, you know, moving on for 40 by the time you've really specced up and you've your Superchars and your Olins and your Brembos and sure. your this and the other. But at the factory now, what's the standard bobber now? Locking on 12 grand, something yeah. like that, yeah. you know. So we're around about double and then a bit, you know, and that sort of obviously includes the bike, yeah. all of our development time, and that you really do get something completely individual and a bike that is a usable custom. You jump on, press the button and go, and it starts absolutely every time. Joe's Supercharged Bobber, which was one of the very first ones I did, it's done 5,000 miles now, and he jumps on that. And Joe, bless him, I hope he's not listening, but he has absolutely no mechanical sympathy whatsoever. a video, honestly, I unloaded that bike and it was cold, and he sat there and went, oh, it sounds all right, doesn't it? And I was sat there looking at this poor thing like, I'm sorry, yeah. I've given you this point. This I'm looking at this bike like I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry.
My child.
So you look at the creations as almost like a bit of you. Is
they are.
Do
they're
you ever
my
get
babies.
Attached to one? That
yeah, I would never
away?
Really. I wouldn't if I could afford it. I wouldn't get rid of any of them. Mm-hmm. You know, because they are just the bikes that I think are cool. They yeah. come out of my head, and I do get I get attached to more some of them than I do the
of
other
course.
Ones. You know, and. But yeah, I love all the things that I do. But yeah, they're all individual and they're all different, you know. So that's what I like about it. And that's what keeps it exciting as well. New challenges all the time, and trying to constantly innovate is great.
Absolutely. Well, I think we'd be crazy, and I'd be crazy if I didn't ask, knowing that especially you're going to be having a new premises soon, setting everything up. Could we maybe come along for a little visit? Maybe bring
absolutely,
some cameras
yeah.
down.
Come down, come and get involved. So when we're in the new place, hopefully by the end of the year, we were told October, but you know, COVID builders, blah sure. blah blah. It's basically the steel works up, the floor's in, they're doing the bricks right now, and then it's right. all the inside. So hopefully by the end of the year, we can get you all down and we can do your tour, and I'll show you our brand new humble abode.
Can we go for a little ride together?
Absolutely. Cool. Yeah, let's That'd get some awesome. Bikes out. We got our ambassador bike now. I'll take the WFB out. I'm sure we'll have some. We get some Triumph bikes knocking about. And yeah, we'll go for a burn. There's some great roads around where we
that'd
are.
Awesome.
So that'd be fun.
One awesome. Last thing, are you coming to Valley Mile?
Yeah.
That's this weekend, right?
It is.
Yeah. I could come. Yeah. I didn't have any plans. You know, I honestly live at work.
Come along.
It's an interesting one because a lot of people ask me, you know, are you, you know, and I was never really involved in the scene.
Yeah,
scene,
of course.
You know, and I'm very much kind of taking a business stance from it, you know, and it's an interesting one, you know, but yeah, if I can get down Sunday, it's Sunday, and I'll probably come down Sunday. I can jump on that bike. I know it's good for 50 miles now, so I've ridden it all the way here. So yeah, I'm sure it'll make it down there. Back so brilliant. Yeah, new premises now as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Should be fun.
Yeah,
should be
yeah.
good.
I'll get involved.
Wicked, brilliant. Well, Jody, thank you so much for joining us today. As I say, I urge you, the listener, if you want to see, if you've been listening to this and thinking, I just need to see more of it. Obviously, the Instagram feed is probably the great place to start. Just look out for Thornton 100 on there. There is a fantastic YouTube channel worth checking out as well. Lots more of Jody. There you can see him over the years content. Progressing in his confidence in front of a camera, which
yeah.
is always lovely to see.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, I have a really strong feeling that the best is yet to come here. I think what you've started is just so incredible and so impressive, and I really do think it's going to be better. So I look forward to just watching over the years, and maybe if I can start earning some proper money, I'll come and be a customer of yours as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me as well, guys. It's good. It's been a pleasure to be on. And yeah, hopefully we can just keep our heads down and keep moving on and growing the business and reach the stars.
There you go. There you go. Thank you, Jody. Amy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us for this little cameo episode. It's
thank
been
you.
Lovely
it's
having
been,
you.
It's been good to be here. Especially, like, it just all happened organically. That
yeah.
A bike guy coming down to talk. So it's good.
You go. It's all good. And, of course, thank you to you, the listener, very, very much.
Sorry for the two-wheel takeover.
Two-wheel takeover. But I think, you know, occasionally that's okay. That's okay. But what I'll say, perhaps now is a good time to maybe dangle a slight carrot for our two-wheeled listening fans. Is a slightly large potential possibility, let's see how vague, yet not on vague I can keep this, that there may be some more two-wheeled content coming from the Driven Chat production team.
Maybe.
Watch Ish. This space, because if the content is desired, we will make it. We have recorded a pilot episode for a motorcycle-based podcast under a very, very similar format. And I guess it's down to you, the listener, if you are keen and if you think that's something you want to hear more of.
Well, send a message.
Send us a message.
Comment. Yeah. Tell people what you think. If you want more bikes, then we shall provide.
Yeah. Just a little comment on our latest Instagram feed that just says more bikes, please. And we'll give you more bikes. And I like doing this because, of course, in 12 years' time, we'll look back at feet. Why is somebody saying more? Oh, because they're catching up 12 years ago. Right. So there we go. Thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode. Jody, thank you. Amy, thank you. Ant, thank you. And thank you, the listener. We will speak to you again next week.
The Driven Chat podcast in association with Paramex Digital. You dream it, we bring it to life. Find out more at drivenchat.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, wow, you've made it to the end, the very end. And it's John Markar here again, reminding you that this podcast, the Driven Chat podcast, has now run its course and has come to an end. To find the new format, search the Driven podcast in your preferred podcast app or head on over to the website driven.site to find some quick and easy links through to the new episodes in the new formats on your preferred apps. Thanks. Bye.